Getting started just now. So thanks for being with us again. I'm with my peers on the call today. There's myself, Jamie, and Eddie. And there's also my peers, Kevin and Brian, with whom you might have dealt in the past. So before we get started, this is an open public call. So it's welcome for everybody, customers, partners. There's Microsoft employees here. And because of all this mixture of people, this will be a call where we will not be discussing NDA stuff. So please don't ask questions about that and no questions about, you know, what the roadmaps are. I mean, if we can divulge it, we will. If there's things that have been publicly disclosed, we will disclose them for sure. And feel free to use the IM window for questions as we go along. The sessions will be recorded and that's it. All right. Thanks for being with us. If you want to watch this session after the fact, you will notice that it's ak.ms/used to be Azure Networking Fridays. Now it's Microsoft Networking Academy or /MNA. Decided to create a really short one. So the agenda for today, first things first, a new show name. So let's start again. So welcome to the Microsoft Networking Academy with the CNE Global Black Belts. And the reason why we changed the title of the show essentially is to reflect this new spirit. We've talked about how we're going to be changing the format during the last session. We're still going to have a session every other week, and it's going to be an alternate of an introductory session and a deep dive session. So this week, it is going to be a deep dive session, and I'm going to be introducing you my colleague, who is going to be walking us through some deep stuff on the peerings and how we configure these things and how you know, how traffic flows into these things. Feel free to email us also at gbbanf. I'll probably update that alias too eventually at microsoft.com if you want to receive detailed schedules in advance. And as I said before, it's available on Channel 9. The previous sessions are available on Channel 9. We're probably going to make a new channel on Channel 9 to reflect the new name of the show, and we'll get that public soon. So this week, it's going to be a deep dive on Express Route peerings with my peer, Eddie Villalba, and then there's going to be an open Q&A. But as I said, feel free to ask questions as we go in the IM, and Eddie will, or myself, or Jamie will try to answer them as we go. So just going to do a super quick introduction. For those of you guys who've been on this webinar before, you've seen that, right, where the big picture of the Azure network is stuff like virtual networks, where you can create your stuff, you bring your own IP address space, and that's what customers want usually when they connect to ExpressRoute. In many cases, they're going to use what we call the private peering, and this will connect to those virtual networks. But there's other peerings, and this is what Eddie is going to be talking about. And ExpressRoute, as a reminder for those of you who are new in the call or don't know, is really a connection between your network as a customer and the Microsoft network. So it's not a connection in a Microsoft data center per se. It's really a connection, a meet-me location, and we have 36 of them, and they're available on our website, and there's probably one close to where your operations are located. So it's a meet-me location where your network meets our networks, and there's route information exchange that takes place there, and this is exactly what we're going to be talking about in the next few minutes. And there are also locations for our Gov cloud and national cloud, so we have one in China and Germany and U.S. Gov. That you can use as well. We have quite a few global ExpressRoute partners there. Even if your telco or carrier is not listed there, absolutely does not mean you cannot connect to ExpressRoute. You can always use some peering locations and deal with the data center partners and the exchange partners to get any from any network. Any carrier can get you there, and from there you can hop onto the Microsoft on-ramp. And I've put also a slide there with some of our partners and contacts. And the deck will be available after the show will be posted. And so you can reach out to these contacts if you need to. So with no further ado, I'm going to introduce you to my peer, Eddie, who is going to be walking you through the next little while talking about some of this detailed stuff.
Thank you, Olivier. Am I coming through okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Let me take over as presenter here. And And okay, great. So I think I have control. Did this slide move? Yes. Okay, thanks again, everyone, for showing up today, and I know it's been a long week for some of you, but next week will be hopefully short for some of us here in the U.S. at least. What I want to talk today, in the spirit of this new format, we want to get into some deep dives on exactly what happens with Azure networking, and one of the common questions that we get a lot, not just from customers, but from some of our partners and that SIs that work with us, is how exactly does all the peerings work? How do we talk to Microsoft? What is all the components that go in there? And more importantly, the most common question is, what's my packet flow? So the first thing we have to understand is how we peer, right? When we connect to an express route location with our customers at these meet-me points that Olivier was talking about, we have basically three different peerings that we can create or establish between a customer's on-site network and the Microsoft Cloud or the Microsoft Global Network. The first one that's most typical is customers will look at private peering. What we determine as private peering is this is a truly isolated peer, BGP peer, between your on-premises network and a virtual network in your tenant, in your Azure tenant that you create and you have full control over. And more importantly, you've established the IP address space and any network virtual appliances and any network security rules that are defined inside of that virtual network. So it's truly private, and it is for you to be able to work with systems, VMs, and services that you've established within that virtual network space. Again, this is a very common scenario. It does require a gateway. So to instantiate, you create a gateway, an express route type gateway. We have three different SKUs of gateways. So depending upon the performance you're looking for, Azure documentation on our Azure.com website, we have the standard SKU, for, at least for express route, standard, high performance, and a new ultra performance SKU for our gateway. So when standard, you get 1 gigabit through 1 gig throughput. With the high performance, you get 2 gig throughput per each gateway, and then with the ultra high, you can get up to the 10 gig throughput on one single gateway to the VNet. So it is important to choose and size your gateway correctly. You can today via PowerShell switch between a standard and a high performance gateway, but it does require you to today for ultra performance, you do have to delete the gateway and restart. Not delete the ExpressRoute circuit, just the gateway. We do have the capability as well to add more capabilities, such as what most customers do, is enable default routing. So therefore, you can advertise default route across your BGP peer to this private VNet, and basically establishing like a DMZ so that all of the network traffic or traffic that's destined outside of the VNet in Azure has to travel back over to your network. And we're going to get deeper into that in a little bit. And we'll talk about traffic flows that happen when you do that. Another capability with that gateway is you also have the ability to instantiate or connect multiple virtual networks in your Azure tenant or across multiple subscriptions to a single ExpressRoute circuit. And that depends upon the type of ExpressRoute circuit you stand up. So we have different SKUs for ExpressRoute. And standard, the default is 10, and then depending upon your bandwidth, you can have multiple VNets up to 100, depending upon the bandwidth you select on your Azure ExpressRoute circuit size, if you're using premium SKU ExpressRoute. So again, the capability to be able to do this, we're going to talk about, while this is great, there could be some implications when you look at routing, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. Last but not least in this section, you can also kind of use a backup. Once you establish the ExpressRoute gateway, you can create a VPN tunnel between that Azure Virtual Network gateway and the customer, your customer network or your network, and use that as a failover route. So if for some reason ExpressRoute does go down, you do have a site-to-site VPN that can be used as a backup as well. So that's private peering. That's talking specifically to virtual machines and a network that we create in Azure. When we talk about the gateways also, it's very important that we talk about sizing the gateway. When you create an Azure virtual network, if you're going to establish a gateway on that virtual network, you do need to create a gateway subnet. It's actually tagged. If you go into the portal, it asks you, do you want to create a subnet or a gateway subnet? Or you tag it if you're using any type of PowerShell or CLI. The space of that subnet is important. Some of our early documentation and customers that first kind of onboarded when they were standing up VPN gateways, they did a /29, and then you kind of backed yourself into an IP space. It is important to have a big enough space. /28 would be good if you're just going to use ExpressRoute. If you're going to use ExpressRoute with a VPN, /27 is required, but there's no reason you can't go a little bit larger, /26. If for some reason later on we add more capabilities or more functionality, that may be required, and at least it reserves that space that you may need for those functionalities. So there's no reason you can't go larger, but obviously within your IP address reservation limits. So now we move on to the next type of peering. So public peering is where we have Microsoft services that are seen as public services. These are services that have public IP address spaces. Their URLs resolve to a Microsoft publicly owned IP address. They're still in our global network. They're still part of that global network, but they're announced to the edge and they're routed through the internet through our public IP spaces. Well, with public peering, we can actually allow you as a customer to be able to access those public services like Azure SQL Azure, SQL Storage, or Azure Storage, I should say, some of the machine learning tool sets, Event Hub, Service Bus. So some of the services that are truly multi-tenant, multi-tenant and region will have these IP address spaces that you can't have a private space for. So what we do is we allow you to connect an ExpressRoute circuit that we advertise back to you all of those ranges. And we'll talk about how to optimize that in a little bit. But it is a unidirectional today. So when I'm on the most traffic will initiate from your side and we'll come over to the public peering. As of April, we did require that you put a NAT in front of that that circuit so that for the reasons, obviously, these are public services. It's just as if you were going out to the internet, you're just taking a different highway. So again, just like if you would put a NAT in front of anything that's internet facing, you would put a NAT in front of this circuit as well. The third type of peering is what we call our Microsoft peering. This is mostly for Office 365 and CRM online services. The premium add-on SKU is required to enable Microsoft peering, and there's also a process to go through with your Microsoft account team for you to be whitelisted to be able to have the Microsoft peering based upon your needs and network capacity. Basically, this network, this ExpressRoute channel will allow you to do quality of service and segment out our voice and video interactive channels and then give everything else best effort channels and more importantly access those Office 365 and CRM services again across a more reliable, a more predictable path using ExpressRoute. Very similar to the public peering, however, you'll see that it is still public IP addresses. And also not every service is accessed through that ExpressRoute service. So the internet is still required, and I cannot stress this enough. You cannot completely shut off internet for Office 365 services when you enable ExpressRoute. Things like CDN and DNS and other services still require normal internet access. So you'll see a little bit more of that when I go over the routing, specifically how the packets move when Office 365 or Microsoft peering is enabled. Now, in some cases, you will have the need for Office 365 and Microsoft Cloud to be able to talk back to a specific client or a specific service back inside your network. Things like Exchange hybrid connections, Skype hybrid connections, all of ADFS, which is the most common that we see, we have to come back in and be able to access. So in this case, we need bidirectional connection. So it is important that you enable that, and how we initiate that is with a NAT, and more importantly, in some cases for customers, using source NATing at that edge to be able to provide that capability or that service. So exactly how does this traffic work? So I showed you kind of big picture. Let's look at basically the life of a packet within ExpressRoute and the customer's premises depending upon the scenario. So in the first scenario, as I talked about, most customers start off with just Azure private peering and then an internet connection on their network. Very typical, prototypical environment. So if we look at a packet that starts at a VM in Azure, let's say you stand up a VM that needs to access like a website. Let's say it's running Apache and you want to access SQL services on premises. Basically, the packet will travel across that Azure private peering circuit through your edge router and into your core network because you trust it. Technically, most customers say, I trust it. They still make it go through a firewall, but usually they trust it to go right into their core because that's the extension of your data center, right? The private peering should be considered an extension of your data center. When we look at a packet that maybe initiates at your core network and you want to talk specifically back to a Microsoft public service, like PaaS service, that packet will leave your core network, go through your edge router, maybe go through some type of packet inspection or some other type of IDS, IPS device, and then traverse your NAT over to the internet and then hit our Microsoft public services, right? So these are services like I said, SQL Azure or Azure Storage as an example. Now, most customers will say, what happens if I have a VM in Azure and I need to talk to a Microsoft public service? Well, in that example, if you just have Azure private peering enabled and you're not advertising default route, that packet actually stays within the Microsoft global network. It still resolves a public IP address, but because of that address is in our larger address space, it goes through our routing fabric and it goes into. So it never actually leaves the Microsoft cloud or the Microsoft larger network. Now let's say, okay, we want to have access to some of our public services, but I do want that to go through specifically an express route circuit for more predictable path. Let's say you're replicating a SQL server to Azure SQL, and it's a very important, you need a low RPO, RTO, and so it's a on-prem SQL server, but you're doing a data sync or a data replication to SQL Azure, so SQL as a service. In that instance, customers will then set up the next peer, the Azure public peering. Once you enable that peer, that traffic that initiates from the core to an Azure public service will then go ahead and again traverse, maybe go through your DMZ or extranet through any security systems, and then traverse your Azure public peer to get to the public services. Now, let's use an example next of a user trying to access Office 365 for mail. So now a customer onboards Office 365. They now have all their mailboxes or some of their mailboxes. They're in what we call a hybrid situation, and they want to be able to access their mailboxes from on-premises. So in this case, I have a user, let's say Exchange Hybrid Connection. It needs to talk to Office 365. Well, what's going to happen again, it's going to traverse. Today, it would just go over the internet. That's how most customers are using Office 365 today. Now, when we say, okay, well, for regulatory reasons, or I want to use Skype for business conferencing and voice, and I need quality of service, and we don't think our network can handle some of the latency requirements that we need, through proper assessments and a network implementation plan, a customer can enable what we call the Microsoft peering. Once we enable that Microsoft peering, traffic looks a little different. This time, again, it's going to go through our edge router, and now it'll traverse the internet for some packets, DNS, CDN, and then for the packets that are destined specifically for the service, they will traverse the router and then go over the Microsoft peering. Now, this NAT, I put NAT here in front of that Microsoft peering, and we'll talk about this in depth a little bit in a minute, but it is important that we look at what we call source NATing as an option there to make sure that we relieve one of the most common problems with Microsoft peering, which is asymmetric routing. And we're going to do a deep dive in a minute on that. So now I have all three peerings up. I have all my traffic or most of my traffic going over my express route circuits. I'm maximizing my value on my express route circuit. Only traffic that needs to go over the internet for whatever reason is going over the internet. And then my security team or someone says, hey, we need to advertise default route over our private peering because we want all of the Azure VNet VMs to the traffic to come back to us. So in that case, now we're advertising default route across this private peer. And all of our VMs in Azure say, I got to send this back. If it's not destined for myself or a known route, a better, a longer prefix match route, I need to send it back over that express route circuit. So now what happens? Things change a little bit. So again, I have a packet starting in Azure. It needs to go to, let's say, public peering. So in this case, what's going to end up happening is that packet's going to leave, and it's going to actually, because the Azure public peering is enabled, it's actually going to go through the express route over the private peer, and then at your edge router, because your edge router will know that you have the routes for the public peering, it's going to do what we call a hairpin, and it's going to hairpin at your edge router at either your facility or within the MPLS cloud that you have your IP VPN, and it's going to go ahead and hairpin back over. Now, what happens if for some reason you don't have Azure public peering? Then you, as the customer, are going to have to take into account what happens when that packet gets over to your edge and route it correctly through the internet. For whatever reason, if either A, the Azure public peering goes down, or you don't want to enable that Azure public peering for whatever reason. I have some customers that have routers at their locations, might be a little older, and they may not, they think they can't handle maybe the amount of routes that we're going to be advertising back to them.
A good case for that, Eddie, would be, like, for example, when a customer has a virtual machine and needs to access SQL Azure stuff.
Exactly. Perfect. And actually, there's some hidden, not hidden things, but there, if a customer starts looking at some of the services, and if you do any deep packet inspection or looking at Wireshark off of your VMs in Azure, you'll notice that a lot of times we're calling Azure services within it. So example, when you create a VM and you enable monitor, or you want to enable diagnostic monitoring, that agent that runs on the VM has to write to Azure Storage, which is a public service, and it writes its logs to Azure Storage. So when, the minute you turn on diagnostic enable monitoring, we have to write that to a storage account. That's all going through that kind of that first peer that I showed you, where it kind of does, it stays within the cloud. But when you turn on BGP, some customers will see that you get failures on that, because it's trying to find an address that your router didn't take into account for, or your on your side, you didn't take account for the customer side.
So we don't do any kind of black magic there and send that packet underneath the covers. We really, if the customer wants to expect their traffic, they see everything, right?
Absolutely. And this is because it's ultimately security and whatever the customer, if this is your network, when we say extending your data center, so you have full control. So if you say default route, it is default route, and we don't try to cheat it in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
Great point, Olivier. So then the same holds true actually for Microsoft peering. So if you don't enable Microsoft peering, and let's say you have I have a customer who created a web service that it's a service on a couple of VMs in Azure, and it actually writes to SharePoint online for long-term retention and lookups and things like that. So the same situation is going to happen. If that, my animation went a little too fast, I didn't change the timing on it. But if a VM in Azure wants to talk to, let's say, SharePoint Online, again, if I advertise that default route, it is important to understand that all packets are going to come back across that private peer, and you as the customer are going to have to make the routing decisions as to where that's going to go. And if I don't have a Microsoft peer, I'm going to have to make sure that traffic can get to where it needs to go, either through the internet or establishing those peers.
So if I don't inject the default route and I'm trying to talk to SharePoint, is this going to go to the open internet?
No, it's always going to stay just like public services and just like Office 365. At the end of the day, all those public IP addresses is part of the Microsoft cloud. So it stays within the Microsoft cloud, or the Microsoft global network, as we call it. So you don't have traffic actually leaving out the internet. It is going to stay within Microsoft.
Okay.
So the next part, after all of that, we got to do a little bit deeper dive on forced tunneling. And one of the things that I've, this is something that a couple of customers have popped up to me, saying, hey, we enable forced tunneling for a very specific reason. It's all about security. We want to make sure that all of our traffic stays, come back to us, because we have, firewall devices, we have other IPS, IDS devices, that all traffic must come through, and that's just our policy. So what happens? Well, by default, when you enable forced tunneling, that 00 prefix is advertised to us as basically part of the virtual network. So it is part of the whole entire virtual network. And as you know, we have network security groups on every subnetwork, or these network security groups. And when you establish them, they say, hey, traffic destined for my virtual network, you know, allow all the traffic to go to my virtual network outbound. We also have a default rule that says, again, outbound, not inbound, but outbound, allow internet access. So if a tag is 0000, allow outbound. So what happens when BGP fails? Well, by default, if you don't do anything, if the BGP fails, there is an NSG default rule that allows the VM to talk outbound through the Azure Internet Fabric. So you basically have to use an outbound security rule to layer your NSG rule and make an implicit deny with a higher priority for internet. So basically a deny internet with an internet tag any your outbound rules on your either VMs or your subnetworks that you want to put these on. And that will guarantee that if BGP fails, then no traffic will ever leave to the using the Microsoft Internet. Again, this is for security purposes, but it's important to understand that. And again, it's come up a couple of times, especially in some of my financial services customers and some of the PubSec government customers. So it's important to understand that that 000, when you're enable force tunneling, we're considering as that part of the virtual network tag that you see here in the outbound security rules. But once it's dropped, it's going to filter down to the rest of the rules. And if you don't put that deny there, you could potentially your VMs could start talking to the internet.
So that virtual network tag really includes everything that I advertise over BGP as a customer.
Everything that I advertise over BGP, correct.
Okay.
Yep. So if we go now to the major problem that we have, and this isn't just customers with Office 365. This could happen with customers who select to have multiple paths to, let's say you have multiple circuits going into the same Azure region or Azure virtual network. Asymmetric routing could be a problem if you're not paying attention to how your routes are being advertised within both on your side and also within Azure. So let's take a look at it within the Azure side of it, or the customer side. And this is a normal, typical scenario. You have a customer who's enabled Office 365. They have both an internet connection, and that's normally how a customer will be able to work with Office 365. So any servers like ADFS or Exchange or any users connecting through their client will go through the routing domain, through their firewall, through BGP to the internet, and then to Office 365. When we enable ExpressRoute, however, now we have in the same routing domain, we have two paths to the same services. And in reality, this is what happens. The internet routes are larger, and the routes that we advertise through ExpressRoute are more specific or smaller. So because of longest prefix match, what's going to happen is if we look at a route, a path of a packet again, let's say from on-prem or from Microsoft Office 365 Exchange going to an on-premise ADFS server for authentication, that packet is going to go out of Office 365 and go over the internet because your ADFS servers are on the internet. But then what happens on the return path? Well, because the path over the BGP Express route in the same routing domain is more specific, it's going to try to go over this path instead. Well, as you know how firewalls work, they're stateful. The flow never started on that firewall. So what's going to happen? That packet's going to stop and then get dropped at that firewall. It's never going to leave it. So this is where we end up with an asymmetric route problem with some of our customers. So how do we solve this? Well, there's a couple of different ways. We can either turn on source NATing at the internet firewall, so that way we guarantee that all traffic that came in through the internet is going to go traverse back out through that same path because the source NAT will preserve that flow. Or we can go ahead and actually segment the routes. So you, internally, you only advertise services, the BGP route services that you learn from the internet to services or internal services that need access to those via the internet, but they don't know anything about the express route circuit. And only things that need express route will go over and get advertised the information that we advertise over the BGP from express route circuit. So you can segment your traffic or you can use source NATing at your edge, on your internet edge, to preserve that traffic. And that's how the two possible fixes for this situation. Again, very common, and we want to make sure that all of our customers understand, right? So this is kind of like internet routing domain and then express route routing domain, and you determine which services need to have access to each. Another issue that may come up with multipath routing, in some cases, if we look here as an example, this is two problems that we see most customers see. In the first example, if we look at the top left corner, West U.S. Virtual network, well, that virtual network basically sees the customers network from two different locations. And same thing with East. So you have two situations here. One, you could have potentially traffic traversing the a slower direction, and therefore not optimal. And two, VMs in the virtual network gateway potentially could see, again, an asymmetric path. You may have traffic coming through on the express route in Los Angeles, but then returning over the express route in New York for some reason, and then you have an asymmetric route path process. So how do we solve this? Well, we do support, in our example, AS path prepending. So what you could do is you can, on each router in your side, you basically prepend your AS number so it's longer for the other side. And then basically what ends up happening is when Azure sees it, we see that path and we say, well, if I want to get to 10.0, I will obviously get to it from, so if I'm looking as the west, if I'm looking at the West network, for example, this would be basically its routing table. 10.1.0, that's on 64.496 from the LA. But if I want to get to 10.1.0, it's a longer AS path off the New York circuit. And then vice versa, New York and then LA, right, longer path. So what does that do for us? It also, again, it prevents asymmetric path. But one of the other things it will do is it'll also protect the traffic, or I should say, allow traffic to find its optimal route. And for some reason, if we lose a connection, it will still find another route to get to the location. So you have kind of like a mesh network. It's fully backed up, but you have optimal routing involved as well when you use the AS path prepending.
So that will make sure that if I have users, for example, in Los Angeles, trying to access VMs that are in West US, which would make sense for these guys to avoid going through my corporate WAN up to New York, for example, and then back on the Microsoft WAN to the West.
Correct. Right. And that's all, it's all about optimal routing, right, guys? So it's, it, and it, this multiple scenarios, multiple cases, but it, again, we don't do any magic behind the scenes. So it, if you can do, when you can set up your AS path, properly, so you have the weights accordingly, the traffic pattern will match those. Now, if we look at a little bit deeper, VGP communities is another way that a lot of our customers look at how to segment some traffic. And this goes back to an issue I was telling you about earlier. Some customers will have lots, let's say, older hardware, or they're a little concerned about all of the routes that Microsoft is kind of bringing back to you for routing. So we have support for BGP communities within ExpressRoute. Now, depending upon the peering, it will be different BGP community options for you. So private peering does not support BGP communities today. So private peer, it's not really not managed there. With public peering, we have actual data center BGP communities. So each region, I should say each region, has its own BGP community string, and you can basically say, I just want to receive packets, I just want to receive routes from these BGP communities, and we'll inject the routes just for those regions. With Office 365, it's by service. So now you can actually say, I only want Exchange, and SharePoint, I don't, right? So that comes up with lots of different scenarios. So an example here would be, I have a customer that says, well, I want all Exchange traffic to go over my Express route, but SharePoint, we're uploading a lot of files, we're doing some stuff, and I'd prefer that to go over the internet, since we have a good enough internet pipe for SharePoint. But Exchange is our key workload. So with SharePoint, you could say, I want SharePoint to just take its normal path to go over the internet. And basically by setting up the community and say, I want to accept all traffic from the 5010 community off the 12.12.0.76. That's our AS number, by the way. And I want to reject anything at that router, that router one in this example, a Connection Express route. I want to reject 5020. Right? So now in this case, the user resolves SharePoint, it'll still go through your internet route, but when they resolve the Exchange, it'll be advertised through your BGP router one, as an example. Another thing that you can do, again, is reduced the amount of routes. So by default today, I think the numbers change regularly, but they're about 2,000 routes from Azure Public Peering and about 500 routes from the Microsoft Cloud. So what you could do is you could, at the Microsoft Peering side, if you're Office 365 customer, say, I only want certain services. I only want Exchange and SharePoint. I don't need anything else to go over the Express route. Then technically you could do that and lower the amount of routes that you actually are going to have advertised back to you. So that's about 300 routes instead. And then you can say on the public peering, I only want the East region because that's where we put all of our services today, or East and West region because those are the only places I put my services. And then we can only we'll only inject the smaller number of routes. So potentially you can get from 2,500 plus routes advertised back to you to a very small number, 200, 300, if you pare down that that process. And that way you don't have to worry about mapping IP address ranges. I have some customers that want to know each IP address range in each of our data centers, and we do publish that, but it's a thing that gets updated weekly, and it becomes very complex to have to do that at the firewall level to begin modifying that.
So essentially the Microsoft peering routes are tagged by the service, and the public peering routes are tagged by the data center or the region.
By the data center region, exactly. Yeah, and those are documented again on our Azure documentation page. We have guidance on each of the strings, each of the BGP communities, and which data center or which region has which number, and which services have which number as well.
And there's many of these routes, as you said. So it means that if I stand up myself a VM somewhere or a SQL service somewhere, even if I'm not working for customer XYZ and I set this up as an individual, as a Microsoft employee, can that customer access my web service over their public peering?
Well, if it's because it basically identifies a region or a data center or a service, then mm-hmm. absolutely, right? It's still a public IP address. At the end of the day, it's a public IP that someone could resolve outside. So if that customer does have public peering and they have the same community strings, or they're seeing the same routes yep. to the same region that you also established a website, let's say, with a public IP address, absolutely, right? That's not protecting, it's not stopping the traffic going into the service or your device. For that, you would have to do, on at least for VMs, NSGs and network virtual appliances in line to prevent that kind of access, or with our public access service, with our PaaS services, depending on the PaaS service, some of them have their own built-in firewall capabilities. The example is SQL Azure has the capability to limit where client connections can come from, so each service would be a little bit different.
Okay.
So, with that, again, I don't know why this slide got stuck in here, but this was basically the example I was telling you about earlier. One of my slides got mixed up, and this is an example of where we have the AS path prepending will also make sure that the traffic flows the proper way, and again, if for some reason we lose the circuit, that traffic still has a way to get to where it needs to go based on the influences of the AS path that we've added to our table. That was supposed to be one back. So, with that, I know it was a lot of stuff that we went through, so I wanted to give a lot more time to Q&A. We have about 15 minutes of Q&A, because again, there's a lot of content in that area, and we just wanted to make sure that everyone understands exactly how packets travel, where they travel to, and what your options are, and there's still different scenarios. So, we can come up with 1,000 other scenarios if we need to.
Yeah, we've been involved in customer exactly. conversations, you and I, and folks in our team. So, guys, I've unmuted the all of you guys. I mean, maybe many of you were muted already, but now you can unmute yourself if you want to ask a question. Feel free also to use the IM window if you want to ask questions. Now is a great time to do so.
So Randall had a good question. I know Olivier answered it, but yes, Olivier, unless Randall, you are correct. When you establish, for every virtual network gateway that you create, for every virtual network that needs to connect to ExpressRoute, a gateway will need to be established. And then obviously there's charges for that gateway. Now, one of the things that we recently came out with, and we're going to have a new another session, one of our deep dives on VNet peering and virtual data center design. One of the ways to alleviate what you may consider, well, I got for every VNet that I want to connect now, and I have 100 VNets, I got to pay for ExpressRoute gateway. With VNet peering, you could have spoke VNets that can go through a central VNet, and that VNet is one that has the gateway, and you can tell the spoke VNets to say, hey, basically, I want you to use a remote gateway for all gateway traffic, and then the traffic will go through a single one. So potentially, you can have 20 virtual networks sitting behind a hub network. Actually, 10, 10 virtual networks sitting behind a hub network that has the one single gateway that's using the ExpressRoute or connecting to the ExpressRoute that way. So that's one way to kind of bring down that what may seem like overburden on virtual network gateways.
And this also allows customers, for example, to centralize not only the internet access, or not internet, but ExpressRoute access, but also other services. So you guys could think about firewalls, for example, or other central things that you could centralize, maybe domain controllers. Just replicating these things in all your virtual networks might not be very effective. It's doable, but it's more management. So if you can put them in a centralized location, then you could get also with that centralized location the benefit of accessing with one gateway your on-prem stuff from maybe 10 VNets up to 50, in fact, can be peered together.
That's right.
So we have another question here from Cody, who's asking, can I share the ExpressRoute with multiple subscriptions by using VNet to VNet VPNs?
That's a great question, Cody. Actually, you don't even need to use VNets and VNet VPNs. So with VNet peering and ExpressRoute, both support multiple subscription connections. So let's use the ExpressRoute as an example first. Let's say you have a single ExpressRoute circuit and you want to connect two VNets that are in two separate subscriptions. What happens, basically, there's an authorization process that you go through. So basically, the owner of the ExpressRoute circuit has to create an authorization token to allow other subscriptions to be able to connect to that ExpressRoute circuit and share it. So basically, they will stand up a VNet, they'll stand up an ExpressRoute gateway, they'll create a connection, and they'll be able to see your circuit. They can't delete your circuit, they can't do anything with it, but it goes to the primary subscription that owns the ExpressRoute circuit that created it. Just realize that the billing goes only to that subscription as well. So the ExpressRoute bill will go to the owner of the subscription that has the ExpressRoute circuit created, and then all of the other subscriptions, they're just going to be paying for the virtual network gateway that they instantiate. The other method is what we were just talking about, is with VNet peering. You could peer VNets that are in separate subscriptions. So you could have a hub VNet that's in one subscription. Let's call that ExpressRoute owner or shared services subscription. They own the ExpressRoute connection. They own any network virtual appliances, shared service type servers, update servers, things like that. And then if they're within the same region, you can peer another VNet from a different subscription to the hub, and then they can go ahead and ride over. So that way, basically, you're using the main hub as your transport path. If that makes sense, Cody.
So feel free, Cody, to unmute yourself if you want to dig a little bit more. And thanks for your question. We've got another one from Steve, who's asking if there's a restriction if one of the VNets is classic and the other one is ARM.
I guess
what he means, Steve, is when those two are connected to an ExpressRoute circuit. Is that correct?
Right, correct.
So with classic and ARM, so when you create an ExpressRoute circuit today, when you create it in ARM, there's an option to say allow classic operation, to allow classic VMs to classic virtual networks to be able to connect to an ARM ExpressRoute. We call that coexistence, ARM and ASM coexistence. And I think the only limitation is they have to be in the same subscription. I think that's that's the same thing also for VNet peering. So if you want to peer a classic VNet to a ARM VNet, you can. But that classic VNet has to be in the same subscription as the ARM VNet. It's not the case for all ARM VNets, but it is the case for the classic VNet.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
And Carlos is bringing a point here. It says you can peer to VNets as long in two different subscriptions, and that's totally true.
Yes.
As long as there are those subscriptions are created under the same Azure AD tenant.
Great point. That's a fantastic point, Carlos. Yes, that is correct. So this is more for intra-organization type pairing. It wouldn't be for an example where I have company A and company B and you want to peer them together. That would be more of a express route or some other option from there. VPN to VPN tunnel would probably be the
best. Because the thing with express route is there's really no ExpressRoute doesn't know tenants, as Eddie talked about earlier. If it's in another subscription, you're gonna have to create a token, and pretty much anybody can redeem that token. So if Contoso has an ExpressRoute circuit, and myself, Olivier, I have one virtual, and in fact, I have multiple of these in my environment, I can absolutely connect my virtual network to that Contoso circuit, as long as I have the key. But when you do this across organization, you need to be very, very careful and mindful of the fact that when you connect multiple ExpressRoute circuits or multiple virtual networks to one ExpressRoute circuit, they all come in the same routing domain. So every virtual network is able to talk to every virtual network that's connected to this ExpressRoute circuit, provided the security will allow to and the network security groups will allow to. But from a routing standpoint, they can all talk to each other all of a sudden. So when you do this across organizations, yes, it can work, but I would advise certainly to think about how the addressing and how the IP addressing of this is going to work. I've seen in my previous life, I've been a consultant a while ago, and as we were connecting different orgs, back then there was not such a thing as the cloud, but we always were using public IP addresses that the organization owned. So let's say I work for Contoso and my friend works for Fabricam and we want to connect the two together. Well, Contoso might already have an allocated block of public IPs and Fabricam as well. So if we talk to each other using these IPs, there's never going to appear any kind of conflict. So you could think of it this way if you do multi-org express route connectivity, because eventually it could cause some issues.
Yeah. So Raji had a great question about multinational express route, what we call global express route type connection services, and what happens, right? So Jamie made a great point. We don't allow transit routing. So in the case of I have a data center in East U.S., let's say I have a data center in New York, and I have East US, I have an express route that connects into East region, and I have VMs there. I have I set up a virtual network in Eastern Europe, and there's VMs there, and I also have a physical data center that's connected through express route in the UK. I can't get from my physical data center in New York to my physical data center in the UK over express route. That would be transit routing, and that's like us taking over your carrier's path. That would have to go over your MPLS path. However, when you connect, if you have express route premium add-on, let's say you have VMs in the UK and VMs VMs in Eastern Europe, Amsterdam, and you have VMs in East US, and let's say you want to do some kind of replication pattern or something between them. With premium, it will ride the global the Microsoft global backbone between those two data centers, right? So once that we do kind of like hot potato, we do cold potato. We keep it on our network as long as possible. So when that traffic is destined for that UK data center, it will stay within the U.S. It will stay within the Microsoft backbone globally. If you don't have premium, you can still do this, but it does there incurs a cost for that kind of transit routing, just so you understand. So it is important to, you know, if you do talk about multinational or global networks, it is important to understand, the express route connectivity at each of those locations and which zoning out the traffic so it stays within those regions and then letting the Microsoft backbone kind of control where the traffic flows.
And another thing that that might be interesting for some of you guys is that if you're going to be using ExpressRoute, let's say out of Ashburn in the U.S. and out of London in Europe, that's one thing. Well, you could have a data center on-prem in the U.S. accessing resources here in the U.S. East, or in North Europe, for example. And that would work if you have a premium circuit. It's just between the two on-premises in Europe and in the U.S. that it would not allow it. However, if you use VPNs and VGP-enabled VPNs, we are supporting this transit routing. So if you have, for example, a VPN gateway in your U.S. East virtual network, then when you do connect to that VPN using VGP-enabled VPN from your on-prem in the U.S., so you would do a first hop from your on-prem in the U.S. over the Internet to that virtual network, and then that virtual network can also be connected to the European virtual network, and the European virtual network can be connected to your on-prem in Europe.
And doing another VGP VPN. Right.
Exactly. So if it's VGP-enabled VPNs all the way, on-prem in the U.S. can talk to on-prem in Europe over the Microsoft backbone. That's right. Not Express Route, but that's over VPN.
Yeah, that's a good point. Raji, when we say no cost, there's no additional data transfer cost between geopolitical regions. So normally, as data transfers within the Microsoft Global Cloud without a premium SKU, leaving one geopolitical region, or actually it's multiple geos, we call them
they're called geopolitical regions.
Yeah, so it's like 1, 2, and 3. There's a number to them, and the zones. When we move from one zone to another, there is a transfer fee. There's a data transfer fee for customers that are using standard ExpressRoute circuits, and they're not using ExpressRoute at all, but they're connecting all of their virtual networks across to each other, either using VNet to VNet VPN. Or some other method, there is going to be a transfer cost. But when you enable the premium, that cost is included because it's an add-on cost to your premium to ExpressRoute circuit. Will the cost be less than VNet to VNet a VPN? That depends. It depends on the size. So when you if you go to Azure.com and you go to pricing on the top and you go to ExpressRoute, when you look at ExpressRoute and you look at the based on the size of the circuit, premium will be a different charge. There's two columns, standard and then premium cost. So it just depends. So you'd have to kind of do if I'm going to get a 1 gig compared to VPN, it might equal out, or it might be a little bit more, a little bit less. So you would have to do
And you might want to talk about VNet peering too, eliminating confusion.
Right, and when I say, when you meant VNet to VNet, I'm talking VNet to VNet for VPN, because in your example, you're going across regions. Peering only works within the same region. So I can only have VNets within East U.S. re-peered together. And in that case, they're basically, and again, this is going to be a topic that we're going to deep dive into, but at that when we do that, when we peer two VNets or 3 or 10 or 50 VNets in the same region, there's no induced network latency between VMs and one VNet and the other. Whereas if you VPN connect two VNets together, the traffic has to flow through a VPN gateway, and then you're going to be the latency will be induced at the gateway. So example is that, let's say I have two big G5 VMs that have a lot of network bandwidth, and they want to talk to each other across East U.S. and East U.S. 2, if I establish a VPN to VPN for those two VNets, there's going to be two gateways in the middle. And even if I use a high-performance gateway, the most I'm going to get through is about 250 megabit per second. All right, so you induce latency a little bit because you're adding these two VPN gateways.
And when you're using those two same VMs, the G15s with accelerated networking enabled, even if they're in different virtual networks, or in the same for that matter, they can talk to each other at 24, 25 gigabits per second, which is extremely fast. And as you just said, Eddie, there's no gateways involved when you're doing VNet peering. So essentially, you can really think of this as a bigger virtual network with administrative boundaries.
Yeah, and we're working on some documentation. The product group is working on some documentation for reference architecture for what we call the virtual data center, and you'll see where we're going to come up with some guidelines for you guys. But there's going to be some future sessions that we're going to do on this same exact call, so please invite some of your network guys and security guys as well to these calls, because we're going to do some deep dive on security appliance, security in the network, and how do you segment security all the way down to RBAC roles, things like that. and bringing inducing virtual appliances, and how do you do VNet peering and create these kind of segmented areas or secure areas in your Azure data center, right? So again, we want Azure, especially Azure IaaS, we want it to be an extension of your data center. We want everything that you're able to do in your data center, in most cases, be able to do in Azure, and in some cases, even more.
All right, so any other questions from the audience before we reach the top of the hour? Feel free to unmute yourselves, guys, if you want to. You can take one last one.
Are we able to access this deck? It looks really good.
Yes, the deck will be posted at the end. It's going to be posted on ak.ms/MNA, Microsoft Networking Academy. It points to an older blog post that I've done in the past for the Azure Networking Fridays. I will recreate a new blog post, but essentially the same content will be there, and all the historic sessions are archived there, and you can access them.
And please also feel free, guys, to email the alias again. And if you have some ideas of content that you want to see or hear, this is it's community driven. We want you to be your voice. We want to hear your voice. So gbb_anf@microsoft.com for now. And let us know what you want to hear. Right, we're here for you. So let us know if there's a specific topic or a specific scenario that potentially you want to kind of cover. And if it's around networking, again, it doesn't have to be Express Route specifically in the essence of the spirit of the new name. It's all about networking in Azure and our software-defined networking, from load balancers and application gateways all the way through Express Route. We can help answer and get you guys the content you need.
All right, and you have our coordinates in the on the deck, and also in the if you go to ak.ms/mna, you can get our coordinates there and reach the team, and we'll try to get back to you as soon as we can. And also, feel free to reach out to your Microsoft account team. They could certainly, depending on the question, they might have the answer themselves, or you might be working with a cloud solution architect that is that knows that stuff. And if they don't know that stuff, they clearly know how to reach us.
Yeah.
We work with them all the time. So with that, a big thank you to Eddie, and thanks to Jamie for supporting this as well. And thanks, everyone, for having been there. And we wish you a very pleasant weekend.
Great weekend, everybody. Have a